Blog Talk Radio.
Happy Monday, everyone, and thank you for tuning in to the HD View. This is Melissa Biliardi, your host, and tonight our call-in numbers are 310-982-4227 and 877-497-4103. When you call in, press 1, and our awesome super-duper producer, James, will cue you into the show. Please tell all your friends and family and colleagues about Health for HD, the HD View, and click follow on our show page to get email reminders of upcoming episodes. You can listen to the show right from your iPhones and Androids as well. So we are literally at 16,400 listeners now, thanks to you, our amazing listeners out there. Huntington's disease, HD, is a hereditary and terminal disease which destroys neurons in the brain and slowly diminishes the affected person's ability to walk, talk, and reason. In time, they will rely completely upon others for everything. HD devastates entire families emotionally, psychologically, socially, and economically, generation after generation. Every child of someone with HD has a 50% chance of inheriting the gene mutation for both HD and JHD. JHD is juvenile Huntington's disease, a more rapid and virulent form of Huntington's. They experience many additional traumatic symptoms like decline in scholastics, adverse behaviors, seizures, dystonia, and other very severe and painful conditions. Our JHD warriors need much, much more support and resources. Tonight, our incredible special guest is our very own Dr. LaVon Goodman. Read Dr. Goodman's newest article titled Supplements and HD, Where Are We? And that was posted on June 3rd. Dr. Goodman writes that over the past decade, a number of over-the-counter or OTC supplements and prescription drugs have been reported to slow down progression of impairment in animal models of Huntington's disease, HD. She says that whether Huntington's people should take supplements for potential human benefit with reported benefit is unknown. This author's opinion has evolved over the years, and she is now more skeptical about using mouse model results than when she initiated the HDDW trials. What follows will be a supplement update. But she says to keep this discussion in perspective, it is much more likely that a healthy lifestyle will give greater benefit than any present supplement. Read more about her article at www.hddrugworks.org. We've put the link up on the chat room. We'll be right back after this quick break. Welcome to the HD View.
Thank you.
I'd like to say hello to everybody out in the chat room. How are you all? And welcome back to the HD View, Dr. Goodman Show. Dr. Goodman, how are you?
I'm good.
We're very honored that you keep coming back to us every month. We're so happy about that. We're going to talk about supplements. So tell us, what is a supplement?
Oh, it has a number of different meanings, but what we're talking about really tonight is things that you can get across the counter that can be vitamins, minerals, herbs, or things that are obtained from plants or animals, or it can be natural foods. Trehalose is a natural food, but we think of it as a supplement as well. Now, there can be a very fine line between drug and supplement, as in just a conversation a minute ago. B12, you know, given in a shot, is a medicine. It's folic acid given in a pill to pregnant women is a medicine. But it's also a supplement that you can buy across the counter. So there's overlap. The omega-3s, there are prescription omega-3s for certain medical indications that are essentially fancy fish oil.
Mm-hmm.
So there's going to be a fine line between what is a supplement and what is a medicine. But generally what we're talking about is things that you can get over the counter that are vitamins, minerals, or products, molecules that are obtained either from animals or from, more often, plants.
Right. So does it kind of depend on what the person is deficient in and whether it has to come from the doctor?
It, of course, if one is deficient in a vitamin like vitamin B12 or folic acid, it can come from a doctor. It can come equally well from, a good preparation of an over-the-counter pill. If a person is deficient in a vitamin, you know, vitamin C, people got rickets when they weren't eating their oranges across the voyage across the Pacific, or the Atlantic, I guess it was. I don't remember, maybe both. The same thing with vitamin B and B6 and pellagra. If you take then the supplement, then you are taking care of the deficiency, you know, vitamin D as well. In Seattle, where we don't get very much sunlight in the winter, it's a good idea. So it's something that's that the body needs that you can be deficient in, and then taking additional vitamin then puts you back into the normal range that you need to maintaining health.
Now, is that something that should be screened periodically by blood test, or how do you...
Well, there are certain indications, certainly vitamin D is something that is screened for in children and women now, certainly postmenopausal women, or if you're at risk for other osteoporosis or types of conditions, vitamin D is kind of routinely done. It's occasionally done for in where vitamin D deficiency is also a little more common in depression and certain psychiatric diseases as well, but I don't think it is a recommended screening procedure. I think you can ask for it, and you can probably get it.
Or possibly
there's certain
conditions.
If a person's anemic, then we'll get, you know, then we'll order various tests, including for B12 and folic acid and others. And iron, see, that's a mineral that if you're deficient in, taking it is a good idea, right?
Right, for sure. Well, let's talk about the supplements that you've outlined in your article.
It was interesting going back over and for this, the topics that I get, you help me review things that I haven't reviewed in a while. And there are a lot of things out there and that have been shown to give benefit in mice or other models. You know, it can be in the fly model or the worm model or the yeast model, but most of the ones I talk about have been studied in mice. Or the mice that have the gene put in. I don't like calling them Huntington's mice because mice are just living test tubes. one of my favorite scientists that I respect so very much is Marcy McDonald, and mm-hmm. she calls them living test tubes. It isn't the disease that they have. The disease is human. Mm-hmm. And what happens in a mouse is not human disease. And that's something that we need to remember over and over. It's a test tube, a living test tube, and nothing more.
Interesting. I hadn't even really thought of it that way, but I see what you're saying.
It's in mouse models. I'm not putting mouse models
right.
down at all
no.
because
yeah.
they are so terribly or wonderfully useful for understanding the biology and what goes wrong in Huntington's.
Mm-hmm.
It may not be exactly the same in people, but it directs us. There's a lot of it that is very similar,
mm-hmm.
if not the same. So we learn so much by having them. They're very important to have, but we shouldn't I increasingly believe that we can't rely on just mice to help us to guide what to put into people.
Yep, yep. Okay, we've got questions coming in already. The first question is, and I don't know who it's from, but wild blueberry extract, any benefit to that? And the second part of the question is, what's the significance of coenzyme Q10? That's one of the things we're
talking about. Oh, two easy questions here, right? not real easy answers. You know, blueberries or any highly colored fruit or vegetable, for that matter, have copious amounts of antioxidants, the flavonoids particularly in are chemicals that are in blueberries. You have a similar amount in blackberries and brightly colored berries.
Mm-hmm.
They're antioxidants and they're helpful. A cup of blueberries will boost your BDNF in serum, at least in your blood. Whether it does in brain, it's not clear, but BDNF anywhere is probably a good idea.
Can you remind our listeners what is BDNF again?
It is one of the protective brain hormones. There's a constant battle in a cell between life and death, if you can think of it that way. And BDNF is a pro-life or pro-health factor in brain cells.
Okay.
And anything that would boost that, exercise will do that. Flavonoids do that. A number of compounds can actually do that. So I think blueberries are a great thing. I want you to go out and take a lot of – is the extract any better than blueberries themselves? Probably not. You'll probably get more in the wild blueberries,
mm-hmm.
The more concentrated flavonoid than you do in those that are commercially grown, but you get a lot in both.
Very good.
So
okay.
do you need to go out and buy blueberry tablets? No. Is that any better than eating a cup of blueberries? It isn't.
Right. Because with the actual fruit, you're getting the fiber as well, right?
Yeah, yeah. You're getting also the good taste.
Yes. And
the satisfaction of eating it, yep.
Right. Okay, coenzyme Q10, what is that?
Right. Well, it is a molecule that is you can consume in various products, but it's also something that can be made. So it's not an essential thing. When we talk about an essential nutrient, that is one that our bodies can't make. Well, maybe I have it backwards. Let me see. Non-essential. Essential, you have to get it in. So it's
okay.
Non-essential. So if you can both make it, you know, the creatine you can make and you can consume, for instance, too. It's a molecule that it does a number of things. Like many molecules in the body, they don't have just one function. They do lots of things, some known, some unknown. Coenzyme Q is clearly an antioxidant, too. but it's also an important cofactor or something that has to be present in the energy electron transport chain that's in mitochondria. So it is a necessary thing to have. In when there are blockages in various complexes that are a genetic defect in the electron transport chain, then energy, the kind of energy, oxidative energy, is not prevents people from growing and die in childhood usually, can't gain weight. So it's a very important cofactor, we call it, in enzyme reactions that are very necessary for energy production.
Mm-hmm. Now, there have been clinical trials with CoQ10.
Right. There have been a lot of mouse studies, and there have been several mouse positive studies in different model mice, not just the fast R6-2, but longer-lived animals, mice. There's also, and of course, what trumps anything in a mouse is what appears to be beneficial to people. And the earlier phase, the early coenzyme Q trial of a number of years ago that failed showed or gave it what's called a trend towards benefit in those people who took coenzyme Q10. And what they mean by that is the FDA arbitrarily uses a 15% benefit, has to be shown for a drug, before it is considered significant enough to say it works. Because less than that is thought it's possibly due to chance. And if you repeated that clinical trial and that same number of people, you know, another 10 times, you might actually fail in most of them.
So
usually it's by chance, had a statistical match of 13%. But the trend is the trend, if you look at the improvement, the trend over time seemed to be increasing as, you know, time went on in this 2.5-year trial. So there's a signal of possible benefit for coenzyme Q, but it was fairly small.
Okay.
And the present trial has a much larger, a 4 times larger dose, and the hope is that a larger dose will give enough benefit that we'll be able to see that in a clinical trial.
Mm-hmm. And that's the 2-care?
That is the 2-care, yes.
Right. You did mention in your article that a large phase 3 trial of CoQ10 for Parkinson's was recently halted.
Right.
Because it didn't...
It was halted because they did not... If something looks in it, clinical trials of any duration, but of particularly long duration, they look at results. Now, not the people who are doing the trial, but some independent committee looks at results and says, there's nothing here. It would be futile to go on. And that's what happened with the Parkinson study.
Okay. Now, we do have another question. Are you ready for a question?
Sure.
Okay. Are there any supplements? This comes from Kimberly Spears. Hi, Kimberly. Thank you. She asks, any supplements that increase serotonin, and if so, which ones?
Well, I mean, there are certainly drugs that increase serotonin, and I would prefer that they be used as opposed to a drug. Now, St. John's wort is a plant extract, and it can increase serotonin, and it's often used as an antidepressant that you can get across the counter. The problem with getting it across the counter is that you don't know the dosage that's in that, and neither do you know what might else be in that extract. Mm. See, when you get a drug, The FDA regulates that it be pure and that one pill has the same amount as the next pill and the next bottle mm-hmm. of pills. And with a supplement like St. John's Wort, you will you aren't guaranteed that at all, because supplements are not regulated by the FDA. A manufacturer can put in a product, and in fact, when some of these products are reviewed, you find that there's half of what they say is in it, or more than half. So one has to be very careful and remember that supplements also can interact negatively with other drugs that a person might be taking. And, of course, you should always tell your doctor if you're taking something like St. John's Wort, because that is interactive with other prescription medicines, can be.
Mm-hmm. And there are some regulatory agencies, aren't there, for supplements? Or
the only thing... Yeah, the FDA can only it's a law that the FDA doesn't get involved unless something appears toxic. So if there are reports of toxic things happening, as for instance with ephedra and similar compounds that you could get for weight loss. In the stores, now that's a plant extract, and so it's a supplement, so it falls under the category of supplement. But the FDA could only act after things were shown that it was harming people.
Right.
So it's not nearly there is no requirement for efficacy, and there's no requirement for purity of product. Now there are some companies that willingly subject their supplement to out of not their own testing but an independent lab, USP and prescribers and that name is going out of my brain at the moment, but there are a couple of, and I mention it in on the HCW website.
Consumer lab.
Yes,
Watchdog
it is Consumer Lab. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. I had it. I was trying to find it, too, because I remembered seeing it on your article, and then
when I printed
the article out, it didn't come out for some reason. I don't know why. Anyway, but yeah, Consumer Labs, or Lab, CL, and USP.
And USP.
USP.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's a dietary compendium for supplement compendium at USP. And then at Consumer Lab, you can review your supplements there.
You have to have a prescription, so you have to pay for it. Some of them. So.
Yeah. I am a distributor for Amway products, and I know for sure, because I've been to their facilities, their manufacturing facilities, that they test everything, and they grow a lot. Most all of their own supplement. So I know that there's a lot better.
But having
control.
It tested in an independent lab takes the bias away.
Right.
So I would always recommend an independent test be done before I would believe it. I'm just a skeptical person,
I know, for sure. Yep. Good stuff. Let's see, we have another question that looks like, or a comment. Oh, that's why they do not say approved by the FDA on the bottles of the supplements, for sure. Creatine. Let's talk about creatine a little bit. Of course, Crest E.
Right. That's about half filled now. They need another close to 300 people to complete enrollment in that trial.
Again,
and it is a molecule that is thought to beef up the energy level in cells. So when you exercise, you deplete energy, or when you exercise your brain, you deplete energy. And creatine in health creatine is a buffer. It can go back from storing energy to back. It keeps the equation going in a circular manner. So you can have energy stored and you can have energy used. And it helps keep the balance in that. And it certainly is disrupted in Huntington's. It's unclear whether adding creatine will help, and that's what the trial is testing.
Mm-hmm. And that's been going on for a while.
It's been recruiting for open enrollment a couple of years ago. They, of course, came in after the 2-care, so many people who might have been in the creatine trial were already in another clinical trial.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something to think about is when you enter a clinical trial, you that if you think of that person as a an asset or a resource, then that resource is lost for another clinical trial.
Right.
Both of these trials are very long ones, 3 and 5, 3 for creatine and 5 for CoQ.
Mm-hmm. Is that pretty typical for supplements?
It's pretty typical if you're looking for functional change.
Mm-hmm.
If you're looking for a symptom, if you're using that as the endpoint of your trial, then those tend not to take as long. For instance, the ACR-16 trial was 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
And then a year, I think, in Europe, but it was for a shorter period of time. But they were not looking for functional or neuroprotective change. They were looking for a motor change or a symptom change. And those trials, if there's going to be a significant benefit, you will see that earlier. And you don't know, of course, in a short mm-hmm. trial, whether that's neuroprotective or not.
Mm-hmm.
That isn't the question you were asking, nor could you answer it.
Right. We do have another question from Marissa Gutierrez. Hi, Marissa. Thanks for asking questions. Can you ask Dr. Gimmon what she thinks about heavy metal cleansing on people with HD?
Not much.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's heavy metal cleansing means giving yourself a lot of diarrhea, I assume.
Oh, I don't know.
Or using a chelator. You never know what's in those chelator. I think there's nothing wrong with a laxative clean out every now and then,
mm-hmm.
as long as you have no dehydration. If it's something that you do more continuously, then you end up losing nutrients and minerals like potassium and sodium that are important to have for maintaining your life and preventing dehydration. But metals that they may be talking about, we don't know what's in those. Which ones they're trying to deplete, and there's no scientific proof that it's really happening. So it's a claim that you're getting rid of metals from the GI tract, but there is no proof of that.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of it doesn't make physiologic sense either. Metals are important, I think, and I think if there were a metal that perhaps a Huntington's person should supplement, it would be selenium.
Mm-hmm.
And I mentioned that in the article too, that selenium is decreased in the brains of people with Huntington's. It is an important trace mineral for the brain. Taking a supplement that is in the range of 2 to 5 times more than daily replacement, I think it is safe. You should never take a level that's considered toxic in a toxic range of the recommended daily requirement. And you can find that on the web. If you go to if you just go under daily requirement of vitamins and Google that, it'll give you a long list of how much is considered the daily requirement, and it will also give a range of toxicity.
Oh, good to know. Okay, we have another question for you from Judy Robertson. Hi, Judy. Okay, she wants to know, okay, she has a comment and then a question. She says, I have not gotten one email blast from hdtrials.org about openings in the creatine trial. LaVon, can you ask HDSA about that since they are the ones in charge of hdtrials.org?
Sent one out when it first started enrollment, but Judy can correct me if I'm wrong. Mm-hmm. I think that there, this is an opinion. I think hdtrials.org might be more effective if they sent out reminders after a year or two that the trial is still ongoing, particularly in the regions where it's being offered. Mm-hmm. I think that has a greater impact than a beginning blast. But that's right. An opinion.
So I suspect that Judy shares
that opinion.
They sent out an initial blast but then haven't been working
right.
on it. Okay. All righty. Well, that's a good cue. Let's talk about, unless we have any other questions, trehalose. And I was introduced to trehalose. Jonathan Monkmeyer actually sent me some trehalose to try for James, and that was really kind of him. But it's a disaccharide sugar?
Right, yeah.
Okay. And that's a natural sugar, right?
It is a natural sugar that's found in mushrooms and shellfish, mussels and clams and lobsters and things. Mm-hmm. It's also a molecule that's found in insects. So it's a natural molecule. Now, we have an enzyme. Humans have enzymes that actually can digest trehalose. So at some point in our history, or our ancestors may have had more trehalose. I don't know, but the enzymes are certainly there. Have been preserved from ever how long. There are other disaccharides too. Fructose is one. So it's not the only disaccharide. But it has the two glucose molecules that form it are connected in a special way that stabilizes membranes and proteins. And there's some fancy physics, which I don't understand, that helps, trehalose helps orient molecules in a healthier preservative way. For instance, trehalose is used in solution to preserve red blood cells for the battlefield, platelets and things like that. So there's a longer, you can preserve cells, for later use very well with trehalose, because it keeps whatever it does to preserve membranes, the shelf life of cells in trehalose lasts much longer than in regular glucose.
Mm-hmm. Now, Dr. Kuman, can you see our chat room? Because we have some really good comments, and I don't know if you can see it.
Actually, I don't have it open, so
okay.
Give me some comments.
Let me just give you some comments. And Judy is responding that, yes, we need reminders from hdtrials.org that there are 300 openings for the creatine trial. And she says, I wasn't aware of the need for more participants. So thank
okay,
you
that's,
keeping
that's
us
good
informed.
For people to know.
Yes, thank you
yeah.
for keeping us informed. So I appreciate that. And again, trehalose, I was kind of curious about that because I was told at one point, and I don't see it here in your article, that it might possibly have neuroprotective potential? Is there going
yeah.
to be a study with this, or do you think?
Trehalose is considered a food product. No one would make any money on it. So would a drug, there's no incentive for a drug company to go forward with it.
Okay.
Unless they, created a special preparation so it's, it's in a form that is can be absorbed better, that would be something that a drug company could work on. But trehalose in itself it's a food, so you can't patent it.
True.
Have any exclusive rights to it.
Right.
That's probably one of the reasons why.
Here's an antioxidant found in green tea, EGCG, and you're going to have to pronounce that for me. What is that?
Yeah. Okay, and I comment on that one, too. It is an extract found in green tea.
Mm-hmm.
It's been shown and it's been studied in, I only sell in fly models, I believe, of Huntington's. I couldn't find any mouse studies. Now, I may have missed one. That's quite possible. It is an antioxidant that is, I think, in clinical trial in Europe for, is this true? I don't know much about it except that it's an antioxidant, and they put it into models of fly and worm, and it seemed to be helpful. Now, what does that mean translated to humans? I don't know. I don't think anybody knows.
But we do know that antioxidants are good for cell health.
Antioxidants are good, but they can be toxic in higher dosages. See, often what supplements do is they make you think that it's going to be better if you take more. Vitamin
That's
E.
That's really true.
And I mentioned that in the article, too. A very good scientist has shown that antioxidant, the vitamin E, will actually cause, while it is an antioxidant and it can soak up those bad free radicals, it also, when it does that, it turns off this process called autophagy, which is already impaired in Huntington's. And autophagy gets rid of the bad protein. So if you turn off the vacuum cleaner, you're going to have more dirt. You're going to have more bad protein.
True.
I'm making it sound simpler than it is, but that's the concept. If you want to clean up the toxin, you don't want to turn off the vacuum cleaner.
Right.
And elevated and high antioxidants can do that. So one needs to be careful about antioxidants, the amount that you take. Don't take more than of any of these antioxidant vitamins than an upper limit of toxicity.
Okay, here's
I would stay below that.
Here's one of my favorite subjects, cannabinoids.
Well,
at least in California.
What can I say? Yeah. I do think that it's, you know, it's relaxing, certainly, and for patients who are in stage particularly, not just Huntington's, but in other conditions, it can relax the mind and the body. I think it helps with some spasticity in end stage, and I think there is some, and I think it's in clinical trial, in fact,
okay.
for such.
Marinol or...
The other one, in Spain.
Okay.
The Spaniards have it good, I guess. No.
I
have actually tried to prescribe Marinol for an end-stage Huntington's patient, and it's only approved for certain indications, so it would not be approved. It wasn't approved by that person's third-party payer.
Well, and this is synthetic, isn't it, too?
Yeah. Yeah.
So it doesn't have quite the same chemical...
No. It doesn't have the combination of chemicals, no.
Right. Alrighty.
But in some states it's harder to get than California. But
that is
there
very
is there's a potential for neuroprotective benefit, too, not just symptomatic benefit. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are some studies that would suggest that.
Mm-hmm.
But, again, it's an unknown.
Right. Well, it's unknown to the scientific...
Unknown doesn't mean that it doesn't work.
Right.
Those are two different things.
Scientifically, it's unknown.
Unknown means that, you know, nobody knows. That doesn't mean that it doesn't work. Doesn't mean that it does.
I'm surprised that we don't have any clinical trials here for that.
Well, the drug that's being tried in Spain is already approved for something else.
Oh.
So it's easier to do a trial when a drug's already approved. You don't have to jump through as many hoops.
Okay.
Because your safety has been demonstrated already. So it isn't as expensive to usually to get a drug approved for a different indication than it is a new drug.
Right. Oh, James, I think James has a question for you.
Yes, I'm here.
There you are.
Yes. Dr.
Oh, dear, he always has the hardest questions.
I know we were speaking before the show about vitamin B12 deficiencies. My brother, like I stated to you, who has Huntington's disease, we have to take him to have a vitamin B12 shot once a month. Other than for brain activity, what are the reasoning or benefits are there for the vitamin B12?
If you're not deficient?
Yeah, I would say, because I know that from what they told us that the reason why he needs this was for the brain activity, motor skills, shaking, and stuff. I mean, that's what they told us. And I know that...
Well, you know,
yeah.
I don't... B12 deficiency is certainly... can be related to brain and cognitive problems, not just blood problems, but brain problems. But
right.
That's usually... That is usually due to B12 deficiency, and there are various blood tests that one can do, not just B12, but another blood test that gives us more information than just the plain B12 one does.
Right.
If that's not deficient, then in my opinion, the B12 is not doing anything.
Well, that's what I was
I don't know your brother's.
Have.
I don't know your brother's situation, so I don't know the blood parameters that were checked. I don't know his situation, so commenting on an individual is always fraught with making mistakes because you don't know the details.
Right.
I can say this. I can say this is that. Vitamin B12 in shot form was prescribed way too much for not ethical reasons in the past.
Okay.
That is not saying at all that that's what's happening with your brother, because I don't know your brother
right.
and his details.
Right. Okay. Well, thank you. Appreciate that.
Good info. Definitely. Speaking of vitamin B, let's talk about vitamin B3, niacin.
Right. Yeah, this, and I actually got to hear that presentation at CHDI, not this year, but last year, by a very good scientist, Ann Messner. And she did this very exhaustive study on this very this benign substance that showed that in her mice, at least, she did show a neuroprotective benefit by giving this nicotinamide, which is not the same thing as niacin that you can get across the counter, too.
Mm-hmm.
Too much niacin will give you flushing.
Oh.
I mean, it won't kill you, but it's awfully uncomfortable.
Uh-huh.
Nicotinamide is one of it. When niacin is absorbed, it is then broken up into two different molecules. One of them is nicotinamide, and if you make nicotinamide, you can get that absorbed, but you don't have to flush.
Okay.
Am I making sense? So niacin or B3 is not the same thing as nicotinamide. So
okay.
Don't go out and buy B3, or you'll be cussing me when you have the flushing.
Nicotinamide
what?
Is derived from
yes.
vitamin B3. Okay, so different than vitamin B3.
Yeah. So don't go out and get niacin and do this.
Right. That's
but
now,
I mean, this would be a safe one because that dosage has been used in people for a long time for dealing with lipid problems or cholesterol problems. So it is it has been shown to be safe, used for long periods of time at that dosage in people. And you can't say that about a lot of these supplements that have been used in mouse. So it has that advantage.
Okay, we have another question. I just found this in our chat room. And Deb Madden, hi Deb. the question is, why is there such mega doses of CoQ10 used in clinical trials?
Well, their reasoning is, I believe, and of course I'm not the one who designed the trial, but I believe their reasoning is that they believe that there was, you know, a signal of benefit in the first trial, and there was. A signal of benefit at the lower dosage, the 600 milligrams. Then they showed that if you give larger dosage of coenzyme Q to people, that you can increase the blood level by giving a larger dose. Mm-hmm. And they also showed that if you increased it above 2,400, that's being used in the clinical trial, you couldn't absorb it. So it was wasted, you passed it out.
Oh.
So they chose the dose that gave the essentially the highest, a very high level in the blood. So their assumption is that more will be better, and that was also suggested, at least, in mouse studies done by the same investigators.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the reason behind it.
Interesting. Okay. How about melatonin?
The melatonin is an antioxidant, particularly in high dosage. The dosage that's required in blood, melatonin is absorbed very easily, but if you take it in a pill form, but the amount that you need is about 400 times, or at least the amount that the mouse needed was about 400 times what you would be taking for sleep, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a mega dose of melatonin. It has nothing to do with sleep.
Oh, okay.
And in fact, it may interrupt sleep.
Ooh.
Because you've turned off the cycling by taking a large dose suppresses the cycling.
Great. Okay, selenium. And by the way, Judy, can you hear me better? My volume is not so good on this phone. So, selenium.
I'd mentioned that earlier. It's a mineral that's deficient in Huntington's
yes.
people.
Okay.
And there was a poster on this at the recent CHDI meeting.
Okay.
It hasn't been published, so it's hard to really review, but at least in those mice, extra selenium, and it wasn't a lot extra. A lot extra is toxic. And if my memory is correct, it was about 2 to 4 times higher, not 10 times, than your RDA.
Okay.
So I would stick
vitamin.
With it 2 to 4 times higher, not more.
All right.
I think one can justify that.
All right. Vitamin E.
But, you know, that's, again, an opinion.
Right. Well,
now,
we value
everything
your
about
opinion.
These supplements that I say is an opinion.
Of
it's
course.
Not proved. It's not known.
Mm-hmm.
So I just want to make sure that that's clear.
Appreciate that. Okay. See, vitamin E.
And I had not actually known before I did this research that a clinical trial had been done way back in 1995.
Okay.
It was short, but it showed no benefit. Not, I think it showed, and there wasn't, there were some parts of it, the things they measured, you know, with the HDRS, they measure a lot of things. Some things got a little bit better, but not significantly so, and some things looked a little worse in those people mm-hmm. who took the high-dose vitamin E. And it was for a short period of time. Mm-hmm. Toxicity from vitamin E, you don't see quickly. So it probably wasn't a trial that was done long enough. And if there was going to be toxicity in Huntington's, you wouldn't have seen it yet. That's not to say that there is toxicity, but you wouldn't have seen it. The clinical trial doesn't answer the question of whether it was toxic or not.
Okay. Vitamin C, as in cat.
And there's very little study in Huntington's done with this, and all I could find was cellular studies.
Okay.
And the dosage that they used to show the effect on these cells would be considered toxic.
Mm-hmm.
So now, you don't want to be deficient in vitamin C, but I don't think there's any evidence anywhere that it's going to be helpful for Huntington's to take more than your daily requirement.
Okay, gotcha. And resveratrol?
And that one, I think we can say pretty safely that there's no evidence for anything. the original studies suggested that this was something that was a life prolonger. You know, you could live much longer if you took this stuff. And they did their mouse studies and they published this, and then everybody got excited about it. But when people redid the studies, they couldn't confirm it, even in mice.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of gone the way of probably not. There was a bunch of hype in the beginning, but that's probably all it was. The enzyme system that it targets is very complex. There were some drug companies out there trying to stimulate it, and some drug companies out there trying to inhibit the same thing.
Oh.
And if you go back and then scientists have tried to sort this out, and there is a very delicate balance between cell death and cell life with these fiddling around with those enzymes. So I think most people have pretty much decided to be very careful with it and mm-hmm. that it's not really understood well enough yet. Although there is a trial, I believe, going on in Europe, an exploratory trial, I think phase one, looking at things
mm-hmm.
in a CERT or the CERT 1 inhibitors.
Interesting. Comment from Judy Robertson. She says, we tried high-dose IV vitamin C for my husband's ongoing bladder infections. No improvement.
Right. Well, for bladder infections, trying to acidify the urine, we would not use vitamin C now. We would use probably something called citrate, and that potentially can help with chronic urinary tract infections. But if there is the problem with urinary tract infections in Huntington's is often due to not being able to empty the bladder.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever you put in there, if there is an inability to empty the bladder on time, you will have recurrent infections. You can keep a person on antibiotics and you'll have infections. So it's a mechanical thing most often in Huntington's patients. When I say mechanical, it's not an obstruction that's physical,
right. Mm-hmm.
But the inability to completely empty the neuromuscular part of it,
mm-hmm.
to completely empty the bladder.
And so that's why people end up with catheters and that kind of thing.
Often, yes.
Yes. Okay, real quick, regarding supplements and dosages for antioxidants, you mentioned 2 or 3 times higher than RDA are safe.
Right. I mean, that, yes.
Okay. And then CoQ10?
What is toxic?
Dosages. Yes. Regarding CoQ10, what do you think is safe?
Well, I think that dose. If you're going to take CoQ10, you, I would stick with what's been shown safe in Huntington's in that range, the 600 milligrams per day that was used in the first Coenzyme Q trial, the CARE-HD trial. That safety has been demonstrated and a small potential benefit, and that's a real signal. I think if I were going to put money on it, I'd say that's real. But I wouldn't put a lot of money on it until there's another study.
Right.
But, you know, if you don't know the answer and you have a signal that's positive and you have Huntington's, take it.
Right.
You know, but don't take these big, big dosages, the 2,400 outside of a clinical trial. I wouldn't. You take yourself to the poorhouse.
True.
When you get Coenzyme Q10, you need to make sure that it's bioavailable. And what I mean by that is, you know, you can pour a lot of CoQ in, but if it's not absorbed, it's not available to your body. So you need a preparation that helps it be absorbed, and the preparation that they are using in the clinical trial is one of those. It's kind of in an oil or a gel. So most of the gel coenzyme cubes are much more bioactive or get from the gut to your blood. You know, there's no use taking something. You're just wasting all your money if it's not bioavailable.
Okay, what about creatine?
The creatine, one needs to be careful not to get dehydrated if you're going to take that. I think in some ways CoQ is safer because you don't need to worry about the dehydration. Creatine is makes your osmotic, when you absorb it, it makes your osmolarity or your the strength of your electrolytes, it acts like an electrolyte in a sense, so it draws water in. And in fact, people on creatine will gain a few pounds probably, and it will be water. But high dosages of the opposite happens in terms of if high dosages can irritate the gut a little bit, and you can get dehydrated. It can become toxic to the kidney more easily, so you want to make sure you don't have any kidney damage, and you don't want to be on a diuretic for something else like high blood pressure. Then you double your problems. It's if you're going to be on a higher dosage than the 15 milligrams or so or grams or so, then you need to have your kidney blood test checked couple times a year at least. And take great care to keep yourself hydrated.
Mm-hmm.
They're using 40, trying to work up to a dosage of 40 in the clinical trial, but that's my anecdotal, brief experience with people trying it that high is that it's a little difficult to tolerate in some people.
Mm-hmm. Now, should people who are on these supplements have regular... I know I asked this before, but they have regular screenings for liver function, kidney function, that kind of thing.
I believe so, yes.
Yeah.
Particularly the creatine.
Okay.
No, coenzyme Q, very high dosages. There's potentially some liver problems. It usually happens in people who already have a tendency for those problems to start with, but you can't always predict that, who's going to be that person.
Mm-hmm.
So having it, let your doctor know that you're on high doses of supplements.
Yes.
And no one knows, what is the best time interval. You know, once in a clinical trial, they check that very frequently. And that's why I say reserve your high dosages for clinical trials, because you're safe there. You don't want to cause yourself harm.
Right. Or financial destruction either.
Right, yeah. You have to,
right.
About an unknown. You know, we like supplements because, you know, we love to walk down that aisle in in the grocery store or the pharmacy and look at all of these wonderful claims and say, boy, I should take some of that. And I'll look younger, my wrinkles will go away, I can be thin, all the muscles can be stronger. You know, the list just goes on and on. We like to believe that we can have control over that.
Mm-hmm.
And the downside is that that's most of it is probably hype. And we need to take care not to be taken in by it, by the hype. You know, drug companies do this too. When you're mm-hmm. watching TV and they say, take this drug because you're depressed. You'll be better if you take this drug. And then they show the unhappy person very happy in the next, you know, photo shoot. But they don't say that, you know, there's another drug that's just as good that's less expensive.
Yeah.
You know, so you're going to have hype from drug companies, from farm, you know, this 68 plus billion dollar a year supplement industry.
Mm-hmm.
$68 billion
wow.
a year that the U.S. people pay for that, pay for these things.
Well, listen, Dr. Gibbon, we need to take a little break. Are you okay to come back with us and answer a couple more questions?
Sure.
Oh, good. Let's take a quick break. We'll be right back. Okay, we're back. We had quite a conversation in the screening room. Dr. Goodman, can you just make a couple of statements that we were talking about in the screening room is the fact that,
right,
you know, we've learned a lot from past experience with supplements.
No. The tune I am singing is very different than that from 10 years ago.
Right.
You know, 8 and 10 years ago when we started the HDDW trials, we did this because we believed that if there were safe supplements out there that were helpful in mice, why not take them? And, you know, I still, there's a part of me that says, yes, taking a safe amount may be beneficial. And if I had to give an opinion, and that's all it is, I'm going to bet that, but it's an opinion, I'm going to bet that CoQ and creatine are helpful, but probably to a small degree. But, you know, that's an opinion. What I've learned over the last 10 years about mouse studies is that there are so many mouse studies that showed that something helped one or another disease that never panned out in people. So I want to go back to that statement that we have to think of mice not as little people with Huntington's disease,
right,
but as living test tubes, and that's all it is.
Mm-hmm.
It tells us about biology. We have no idea if it's going to direct us to, in terms of a drug that is helpful. Now, we'd like to see it be positive in mice and give us some direction, yes, and of course researchers should be continuing to do this, and our drug developers, but we can't. I think it is probably foolhardy to base what we take solely on mice or bring to clinical trials solely on mice. And that's because I have evolved and I have learned more over the last 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I use the analogy also is that, you know, 10 years ago I was prescribing postmenopausal hormones for women because I thought it was beneficial to them.
Mm-hmm.
I have learned in the interim that it's even potentially harmful for those who have a uterus in still. So I stopped that practice, mm-hmm, because I was convinced that from my reading and from clinical trials and such that was the better medical thing to do.
Right.
It sounds like I am backpedaling, that I am changing my view, but I'm changing it. And again, it's an opinion.
Well, because you're learning. We all learn.
Because we are learning.
Right.
Mouse studies, there was a, and I think one of the things that was particularly convincing is when we first started HDW, we visited and are friends with somebody called James Haywood, whose brother had amyotrophic lateral sclerosis,
uh-huh,
and he started he was urgently wanting some drug to be found,
mm-hmm,
so he developed actually his own mouse factory to try to screen drugs for something for ALS,
mm-hmm,
with the urgent motivation of his family member. Now that sounds familiar, doesn't it?
Yeah.
We do that because we have urgency. So what he actually did is he repeated experiments that had been positive in, you know, laboratories, academic laboratories, and he couldn't repeat them. And he showed that there were various reasons why that was so, that not enough mice were used for it not to be chance. You know, so there were various technical things to suggest that some of these mouse studies, you couldn't believe them or you shouldn't believe them any more than you would believe a small clinical trial, because you might get that result just from chance. Creatine worked in the ALS model, mouse model, but it failed in human clinical trial. Minocycline worked in ALS model and in the Huntington's model, too, at least in some labs it did. But, you know, it was toxic in ALS people.
Wow.
So you cannot take just mouse studies anymore.
Right.
That's all we had before. And so we went with what we had because that's all we can do. And then in a sense, you know, do I apologize for that? It was my best opinion at that time, but I have learned more and I still want good things to happen. I'm just as urgent or more so than I was before.
And I'd like to kind of back up to a comment that one of our awesome people in the chat room said earlier, is that pretty much we need to educate ourselves and make our own informed decisions. That was Deb Madden.
Of course.
And she said,
of course,
you know, physicians and clinicians are hesitant to make any recommendations because there's nothing that really proves a theory for supplements.
Right. It's because we don't know. That doesn't mean it doesn't work.
Right.
I agree.
We do have some more questions real quick here. What supplements should someone in the last stages be taking? I don't think they have her sister on any. This is from Kimberly Spears, and she's dropping a lot of weight.
Well, I think that more important than, you know, supplements are used in different ways. Now, you're supplementing calories, so you need to give... The best answer for that is you want to give things that are high in carbohydrates and fats also, protein. You need to give lots of calories. And carbohydrate calories are probably the better thing to give than protein, in my opinion. But you need both. So calories, that kind of supplement. And it is also with end-stage Huntington's, you're not absorbing nutrients. So yes, when you get Ensure, for instance, there will be additional nutrients in that Ensure. It's not just calories. So something like Ensure will have a good complement of supplements,
right?
Both the vitamins and minerals and the calories.
Something Judy Robertson says in the chat room as well. She says, asked Dr. Goodman the question about the late stage, which we did. She comments, after our ordeal here, this is Judy commenting, I'd say make our loved ones comfortable, but don't do anything that will prolong life. Try to make them happy, feel safe, not scared. And no pain. That's her opinion.
Yeah. I mean, I think in many, many times, end-stage Huntington's is not well cared for. Attention is not paid to comfort. Discomfort is sometimes hard to interpret. You know, hospice folks are used to cancer people telling them they have pain, and that's easy to understand. In Huntington's or other neurodegenerative diseases, people, Huntington's folks, can't say, I have pain. In fact, you ask them, they'll say, no, I don't have any pain. But you know they're uncomfortable. There's discomfort.
Right.
And what I tell hospice people or family members is that if your loved one is uncomfortable, that is pain.
Right.
And treat that as you would pain in a cancer patient.
Right. Yeah, because they can't really communicate well.
Well, also the pain perception is different in Huntington's. Pain is actually, if you were to, you know, pinch someone with Huntington's, and actually they've done this study, you give a pain impulse, it doesn't register as painful as it would to someone who doesn't have Huntington's,
mm-hmm.
but the pain impulse doesn't go away. It kind of stays longer.
Mm-hmm.
And so the amount of pain is the same. It just stays longer.
Right.
The amount of pain under the curve is the same.
There's no release from it, right?
Much less release. It hangs on.
Mm-hmm.
It hangs on.
Yep. Well, did you want to have a last statement about supplements for our listeners tonight?
I think that, the choice to take a supplement or not belongs to the individual. If you want to take a supplement, educate yourself. I think that's important, the best way that you can, realizing that there is not going to be an answer, though.
Mm-hmm.
Will I help my Huntington's if I take coenzyme Q is unanswered.
Mm-hmm.
It's a leap of faith that these things will be helpful. I take B vitamins for no good reason. Now, why do I do that? I don't know.
Does it give you energy?
I'm sorry?
Does it give you
I'm not
energy?
Deficient. We just go out and we walk through Costco and sometimes we buy these things.
Mm-hmm.
Why did I do that? Well, just in case. Folate can sometimes be low in us older people, and so why not? And in some sense, it is for the soluble B vitamins. Why not is okay. Because if you don't need it, you're going to get rid of it, and it's not going to cause you any harm. However, if you take things that aren't water-soluble, you can harm yourself. So you need to educate yourself about what you're taking to make sure you don't harm yourself.
Right.
Whether these things are going to be beneficial, no one knows. It's an individual decision. Are mouse studies important? Yes, they are, but they shouldn't be the only thing that guides your decision, in my opinion.
Very good. Well, I think we have a couple announcements. Dr. Goodman, thank you so much for sharing.
Well, thanks for hearing me out.
Wealth of information. We need to have you on the show every month. I hope you'll stay with us. James, do we have some announcements tonight?
Hello.
Hello, James.
Here we go. Sticky button. yes, I wish Clarice Miller was with us from the Shalimar, but she's busy today. But I wanted to make sure that everybody who is listening knows that we released the Faces of HD magazine, which is taking off like crazy. I was just looking at the stats. We're over 500 views on the magazine, and we just released it.
Wow.
And since releasing it, we received an overwhelming response from the international community. Take a country, literally. I've received testimonies. I've received photos. I've received video testimonies. I want to personally thank the international community for taking part in this process because not only is it fun, but it's another way for us to see one another. Because the biggest challenge is, we don't get a chance to see each other.
Mm-hmm.
We are family.
Yes. And we are not even in June 5th, and we're already almost done with the June issue. That's how many entries we've gotten.
Yep.
So this is going to take off multiple languages, by the way, just to let you know.
Mm-hmm.
So keep submitting your testimonies and your photos and your video testimonies because we've got several more surprises coming your way.
What you're doing is very awesome there.
Oh,
awesome. Thank you.
James and Clarice have just done a fabulous job with this magazine, and it's just going to get better. The first magazine is always going to be, the starter, but it's just going to get better.
We should have done that.
Yes, and it's
But you know what's also awesome? The feedback from the community. Like Kimberly Spears just asked me a little while ago, we're getting people in other countries asking, is it going to be in my language? And the answer is yes, because we've been blessed with having here in Central Florida, with Valencia College and University of Central Florida, where I have professors that are actually working selflessly to help me translate everything. I mean, we have the trailer in 9 languages, and all I had to do was ask.
That's it.
And it's amazing. It's absolutely amazing.
Wow. Fabulous.
Good work.
James, how many countries are in Zoom so far?
Oh, 6.
Okay. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Wow.
And we're not done yet.
That's exciting. That is exciting. Well, we've got some more good stuff coming down the pipeline. So, you know,
absolutely.
Stay tuned, everybody. We're moving and shaking things around. So, anything else, James?
That's it for right now.
Okay.
I know next week we'll probably want to say a few things. We're just going to wait for it to pan out.
Yep. We've got 7 minutes left here on the clock. So let me just wrap things up. I want to thank everybody for tuning in. Dr. Goodman, thank you so much for being with us again this month.
Yes, that's
upcoming
good. Thank
shows.
You.
Yeah, awesome. And it's really great to see some new faces there in the chat room. Good to see that. So anyway, upcoming shows, June 11, the HDV with Meta O'Rear. She's a wonderful person, great friend of ours. June 18, the HDV with Dr. Beth John in New York. June 25, the HDV, Reach 2, HD, and Prana will be here to give us an update. And then July 2, hopefully, Dr. Goodman will be back with us. July 9, the HDV with Phil Hart. He's going to give us a disability update. So, again, everyone out there, thank you so much for tuning in. Have a great week. We'll talk to you on Monday. Take care, everybody.
Good night.
Good night.
Are we really going to interrupt Blondie?
I think we are. Too bad, Blondie. Good night.
Good night.
Love you all out there, and have a great week. Talk to you next Monday.
Love you,
Monday.
Melissa.
Bye.
Bye.